Take possible action to cause an election to be held to fill the vacancy.
I'm sorry, Brian. You can, if we need to do nine, you're fine. I just said those are the items I need if I could get those through, but nine's more important.
All right, that's fine.
Thank you.
Okay, item nine, consider and take possible action to direct staff regarding pay items used to enhance the final retirement benefits.
Okay, so all this time we've been talking about PEPR members and what's included in their compensation. We need to change gears here. Item nine specifically is about how to handle people whose compensation is under the CERL definition of compensation earnable. At the last meeting in August 14th, the SARA board requested information that came from two separate newspaper articles that brought up two separate instances of what could be called spiking. And the two separate issues were that one of them was that on-call pay was paid to a member or members who volunteered to work additional on-call above what's required to have it included in their final compensation. And this other issue was that some physicians were being credited with on-call pay without having to be on-call. So we'll take those, the first one first. A little background. So we talk here about the Ventura decision back in 1997, which said, wait a second, you need to include more things in the definition of compensation earnable. The definition includes more than what you're including. And right away, all the systems knew that they would have to guard against spiking because you can't just include everything without having people manipulate their salary to spike their pension. And even before the final effective date of the final decision, in September of 97, our board did issue a policy on how they were going to monitor for final average salary spiking. That's the name of the policy. And which they stated what they're going to do is they're going to go through the pay items and say which ones are included and which ones aren't. And by only including the included ones, we're going to control what people can put in their final average compensation. And we're going to tell the employers which items to include, which items to take contributions on. So a few months later, in December of 97, we finalized the policy. It's still our current policy. And we listed the pay items. And one of the pay items we listed was on-call pay, as you know, as being included. It's on the list. The pay for overtime is not included. It's specifically excluded from the statute. And is addressed in our compensation policy that if it's in excess of what's considered normal working hours, it's excluded. Okay, so fast forward to 2012, when AB 340 and AB 197 were passed. AB 340 put in a new section which required us to adopt a procedure for determining whether compensation was paid to enhance the retirement benefit. And we did adopt a policy and implement a procedure to do that. That's attachment three. And as Richard was asking earlier, when we were approving the items, consent items, and we said we left one person off, we didn't want to put them on the consent items, and he says, where do we have that in writing? It's attachment three. It's the policy that we did for looking for these compensation enhancements. And in AB 197, which amended the definition of compensation earnable, there is a specific exclusion now that we exclude any compensation determined by the board to have been paid to enhance a member's retirement benefit under that system. That exclusion refers back to the policy. It was the same thing. The policy determines what was paid to enhance the benefit. But of course, there's a stay in place, which prevents us from implementing that. In April 2013, we again discussed this procedure. We gave a little more information on what the procedure is, what we're going to screen for, We very clearly said, and it's in the minutes, that we weren't implementing it for current employees because of the stay. And there was some concerns raised that what this meant was that an item that the board said is included is now going to be further scrutinized and possibly not all included. That would be a change. And we said, yes, that is a change from our past practice. That's what AB 197 and AB 340 gives us the authority to do, to analyze the pay items that are included, obviously, because they can't enhance the benefit if they're not included, and to possibly exclude some or all of them. Okay, so we have a procedure implemented to screen for these things. The question at the last meeting was why don't we see this information? Why are we adopting these or approving these retirement benefits without seeing this information? It's because we have a stay in place. But we did discover two things almost immediately after implementing the procedure. The one thing we discovered was that callback pay did show up as something that was dramatically increased in the final average period, and it was not included by the board. It was never included. It was specifically excluded, even though the county had been taking contributions on it and we had been including it. That we see as an administrative error, and we're working to correct it, and we've discussed it. We're getting the board informed on what's happening with that process. And the other thing that the screen turned up also immediately was on-call pay. It showed up for people in several different positions. There was the common denominator that they all happen to be in health services, but that's just what we've seen in the 9 months that we've been doing it. I will say that, you know, we've determined that the policy, our current policy that we have in place, includes it. And when we analyze it, we see that there's an increase. We make note of it. We gather information. We do enough to determine if we think there's any fraud involved. I think we haven't, you know, we don't suspect any fraud so far in any of these cases. But we are including it because that's what the policy is. That's the policy we have so far. Then the other article, actually a separate article, is the on-call pay that's reported but is not for being on-call. So far, all we've done is we've told the auditor controller and we've contacted the county to try and find out what they're doing. Is this going to be recoded as something else? Is it going to be taken away? We haven't actually done anything with that. We're still gathering information. Should I go to the example? Okay. So we do have a procedure in place to screen for benefits that were paid to enhance a benefit, compensation that was paid to enhance a benefit. We do review them. Attachment 5 is an example of one. It happens to be for on-call pay. So previously, what we've done earlier this year, on a few other cases, we'd look at them. There was one that we actually brought to the board and said, this is something we're concerned about, we want to look at, we want to put them in pay, start their retirement benefit without the on-call pay while we review it. You may remember, we did that, we reviewed it, we eventually included the on-call pay. That member has retired, a few other members have retired with on-call pay.
What was the criteria you used to determine that on-call pay would be appropriate in that case?
That it was scheduled, it was assigned to them, and we talked to the assistant director of the department who makes out the schedule. We reviewed the schedules, it was scheduled, he was on call.
There's two different things that we're looking at here. First, they look to see if it's determined to be an includable pay type,
on the list. And then, once the calculation goes through, it goes through a process that we have internally to say, does it appear that this final average salary was spiked or was increased by, we have internal controls on this that I'm not going to share at a public meeting, but we then determine if it meets that level, and if it does, then we look into it further. So that was this particular case. It was determined eventually that the on-call pay was a pay type that was includable. The board had determined.
And had there not been a stay, had we been fully implementing AB 197, it would have come to the board, and we would have probably recommended excluding portion of it or possibly all.
Yeah, no, I was just trying to get a better understanding of what triggered the hold on that portion of it, because you had seen either a large amount of on-call pay, or so there was something about it that triggered that review. And I guess I'm equating that to the situation that was written about in the Times several weeks ago, where you have a $94,000 annual comp individual retiring at $126,000, a lot of it because of the on-call pay.
Right.
So I'm just trying to equate these two situations.
Well, this is the same position, actually. This person is in the same position. It's the same duty he's performing. We reviewed everybody in that position who retired since 1999 to try and get a picture of what's going on. And we have a very good picture now of what's been going on.
very clear picture.
So we know about the one that the article was written about. There's also one in 2013. Okay, what the article didn't write about, it wasn't quite as dramatic, so it didn't make for as good of an article, but it did. We did act on it. We did come to the board with it. We did scrutinize it. And we did retire him and start his...
So bottom line, Curtis, what you're saying is if we can implement the portion of AB 197 that allows us to review it, the page that everybody has in their packet is the type of information we would bring to the board to see if the board would like to take action to exclude something that might be enhancing a retirement benefit.
What page is that?
It is attachment number 5.
Attachment 5.
And does that mean we can't take action on this one? Because
there is a stay in place.
Because the stay,
right now,
even though other action may be. So, okay.
Well,
to him? Are you going to leave him in a stay position, or what are we going to do?
Which him are we talking about?
The one who's on attachment 3.
He or she.
The employee.
So for this particular member, I think what Kurt is showing you is that all the mechanisms are in place to catch, with this spiking filter, something like this. And that can be brought to the board's attention and discussed. However, because of the stay order in place in the AB 197 lawsuit, none of AB 197's provisions can be implemented by the system at this point.
Okay,
and so no exclusions can be made.
But depending on the outcome of the system, so the filters here, we'll see these in the future. Until the decision is made on 197, the retirement board has no option other than to move forward with processing this application. We've talked previously about clawbacks on retirees and different things, but will this, given the action that the retirement board has to take, given the stay, will we then be able to revisit this and other retirements that are granted in the interim to go back and recalculate and reanalyze the compensation or the retirement benefit? If the lawsuit prevails in the AG's, if the lawsuit says that if the stay is lifted and the court allows us to utilize these exclusions, will we be able to revisit this case?
Very good question.
Okay, well, you can come back to me with it. But I do want to know what the answer to that question is.
Harvey, did you have a response to that?
Respectfully, we won't know the answer to that question until the outcome of the litigation.
Okay. Okay.
We'll know it then.
Okay, then can we red flag these kinds that go forward?
Yes, we will.
so that whatever the, should the decision allow us to do that, we can then revisit this. And can there be a letter that is sent when you grant, I don't know what the process is for doing that, that,
they're doing that.
That this particular retirement is granted at this time, however, there's a stay in place, and until there's an adjudication,
conditionally,
this your retirement benefit could change depending on the outcome of the lawsuit.
I think that's a reasonable
approach.
Yes, that
can be done.
I think we need to do that in all future cases.
Deborah,
I just want to make sure I'm clear on what you're saying is that there is none of these other policies that we had in place prior to AB 197 allow us to deal with this particular employee.
That's correct.
That's correct.
Scott, well, and Richard.
On that point, I think Deborah was hinting at where I was going. The existing statutory authority for us includes the ability to investigate and, if appropriate, take action regarding fraud. Would we all agree with that? So I think the real question for some of us looking at the more extreme examples that have come forward, particularly the one that was written about, which is the health services employee, is when is the intentional gaming of the system, literally, to try to amalgamate all the on-call pay hours you can possibly put in the course of the final 12 months of employment, not fraud? I mean, where is that line? Have we defined it before? I'm not suggesting I know we have or haven't. I'm asking, have we ever defined it? And I guess I'm trying to understand where the, if it's not fraud, where does the gaming spiking line end and blur into to fraud? I mean, this is someone who consciously, apparently with a departmental policy in place,
with
right?
With the help of a supervisor.
Aggregated and wrote, the on-call time was selectively applied to the individual individuals most closest to retirement in the final 12 months for the sole purpose of enhancing terminal pay, right? That's the game. So the question is if that's not fraud, what is? So that I better understand it. That's the question.
I don't know that we've ever looked at these situations as fraud, so we don't have any experience to base that on. The board would have to make a finding that there was fraud, and that's a factual issue, as you know.
I see the statute has several elements that would have to be demonstrated.
What we're talking about is a pay item that the board previously approved as included without restrictions, and that was used to its fullest extent to maximize someone's pay during their final average salary period. That's exactly what AB 197 now gives us the tool to look at and exclude. Arguing that that's fraud will be tough.
I mean, in a situation somewhat like that, if it was reported to us that this individual earned X amount of money for working X amount of on-call or whatever the class of the differential might be, and in fact that person didn't work those hours, but it was reported to us, and the benefit was based on that, and it wasn't an administrative oversight, but we could prove that it was intentional, that there were actions to mislead the system in determining what its benefit would be, then that's a situation where you're going to have fraud. Here, where someone took advantage of an existing lawful action at the time, is not going to be fraud, but it can be prevented based on the tools that are provided in 197.
Yeah, I guess I'm not.
There's nothing criminal about. There's nothing criminal about what.
But
what
have we determined there's nothing lawful criminal? Lawful. Have we actually asked for verification that those hours were worked?
Yes.
We did. Okay.
All right. I'm sorry, Richard, and then Harvey.
Just a cautionary point. While I appreciate the individual observations of board members who are attempting to colloquially define fraud, since this is something that may well end up in litigation, I would prefer that the board try not to establish on the public record what it believes is or is not fraud in any particular circumstance. Is going to depend on the facts. And I just think we should stay away from that in the public arena right now, given that this may well end up in litigation.
Okay. Richard, fair enough.
Yeah, two items. I'm not sure you can put a first item. I'm not sure you can put a condition on a pension that you granted, but you know that'll be a legal issue. And the second item. I find it insulting that in this day and age that we're implying that this board, this association, which has been in existence for over 50 years, never had the tools to deal with fraud. And I think we have. I think in the past we've dealt with people who were overpaid or shouldn't have gotten their thing. We just didn't publicize it. You know, it wasn't very transparent in those days, our actions that we took. And people would have no way of knowing it. But I read this section, and Scott was referring it, 31455.5. I very clearly think the language in this section would allow us to make a difference here. Fraud is used as the title of this section, so maybe it's not necessarily meaning the fraud from a criminal type of thing. It says fraud against county retirement systems. So I'm not sure that the definition that you would use in a court of law for somebody who bilks some retirees out of some money would necessarily be the same definition we'd use here. But you know, at the end, it says if you make a statement, it says, and they define statement for the purposes of this section, and some of the things includes report of compensation, duty records, or any other evidence material to the determination of a person's pensionable compensation. So none of this fits right now. This is somebody who we have an admittance from a department head that it was a manipulation, a public statement. And, you know, the law already says that we're looking at reports of compensation or we can look at it. I'm just not clear. But what I am clear about is I don't remember a similar situation, but I can remember this board, and not the current members, or most of them at least, when the employer, the county employer, decided to give department heads a 2% bonus if they told them they were going to retire in a year. Okay, and I sat here in this board and said it was unfair and that was spiking and everything. That wasn't the board's vote. Board's vote was go right ahead. That counts as their pension. And then a couple years later, the paper rags on and everybody gets religion. And all of a sudden, oh no, why did we do that? Who did that? Da da da. You know, that's where I seem we're at right now. All right? I've also watched this board when department heads, again with the county, were elected and still collecting a pension full time. And how we handled that. And, you know, it's the same old thing. We have the tools already. Just somebody's got to stand up and do it. And this is wrong. There's nobody that's making an argument this is right. You're making an argument, oh, well, that's on hold or something like that. This is wrong. We have the tools. The language is right there. Maybe fraud's the wrong word to use, but I was using it in context of the section. And that's what it meant. And it seems very clearly we have a right to look at things like reports of compensation, medical records, because this covers the whole spectrum of things we do, whether disability apps or just a regular service app. It's all right there. I mean, what is a report of compensation? What is a duty record, duty statement? That's when you worked, right? That's whether you were on call at that magic moment. The very things you're looking at in your criteria, I think it's here. I don't think we need to wait.
Is that your motion?
You know, I want to know where people are going with this. Okay, so, you know, but it's talk, and it's right there, and everybody seems, oh, we can't do anything. And that's insulting. We've dealt with people who have manipulated it in the past. It just wasn't brought up. I mean, we never used to release people's salaries, how much they got for pensions, none of that stuff. So, you know, that's all. But to even believe that this board, this association, and all the different board members just, oh, there's nothing we can do about fraud when we see it, or nothing we can do about spiking when we see it. That is truly incorrect. And that's insulting to all the board members who have been here before, because there's a lot of people been on this board, and nobody was in favor of spiking. And people did things about it. Simple as that. We did things about it. And it just didn't get publicized. And then we've hit this peak here. Well, there's nothing we can do. Well, you know, things were done. And it just wasn't publicized out. But it's just too easy to say, oh, we can't do anything right now. I'm serious. Does anybody believe that there is anything? And I'm saying the smoke and gum comes from the department head, which is the employer. You know, people would like us to think, well, there's the county and then there's these individual department heads. It's one employer. Okay, simple as that. And they control. And the Board of Supervisors is the total boss of them all. All right, the buck stops at their chamber, and it's the whole county. And they've done things, and it's okay, you know, but I think our language is clear that we can take them out. I must admit that maybe, you know, the new statute makes it easier for us or gives some other guidelines, but we could always stop fraud. We could always stop spiking. It's just hard to prove. But, you know, when the department head says, yeah, that's why I did it, to spike their pensions, Jesus. I mean, what more is there to it? Okay? That's manipulation of our system, of legal things. And that's how do we deal with it. But to say we can't, that's insulting. Okay? The reason we're not, if we don't deal with this, is because you don't want to. Simple as that. You don't want to. You can say a lot of things, but you just don't want to. And it's just like some of the other past examples when frauds come up. You don't want to. I say we can deal with this right here and now, okay, under existing statutes. But if you don't, it's fine. But let's go on record as saying that. But it's insulting to say there's nothing we can do right now.
Karen?
May I suggest that if the board would like to look into whether or not situations such as these could be characterized and as fraud, that we put this on a future agenda with fraud in mind, as opposed to what the standard is under AB 197, which is simply finding that there was an enhancement that was made, provided by the employer to the employee in order to enhance someone's pension. It's a different standard, so I would suggest that we study it differently under the fraud section.
Why don't we do that? I mean, we can certainly explore all options with regards to dealing with issues like this. And there really are two separate issues currently with health services. You have the person who worked a lot of on-call in their last year, and then you have the issue that was raised in the newspaper with regards to people being paid for on-call that were not working the on-call hours.
And they were both in the paper.
Well, they both ended up in the paper.
Both issues were in the paper.
Okay. Which may or may not, at this point in time, be a retirement issue, because the people who were receiving that extra on-call pay that they weren't working may not have been, may not have retired. I don't know.
Is that not an issue? I mean, I don't know what's going on with that internally in health services, but shouldn't the DA's office be involved in that? I mean, because truly, in my own opinion, if you're falsifying time records and you're getting paid for something you didn't work, then that is actually fraud from an employer standpoint. So, I mean, I don't know if anybody's looking into that.
Well, we're unaware of what's going on the employer side. We know that we've sent a letter over asking for further information. Mm-hmm.
So can we delay the determination of retirement on the case that we have before us?
That's not the one So there's two articles, there's two issues, one memo. The example is not for one for on-call was paid. That was for primary care physicians. On-call credit was given where no on-call duty was performed. The example before us is for someone who's not a physician, somebody who simply had on-call pay only in their final year. That is not, well, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's not the kind of fraud that we're talking about,
okay.
I think.
So what I'm hearing is you don't, none of you three sees an avenue for us to do anything but approve that retirement and move on.
No, I think that you can look at that under the fraud section and see if you can find fraud. We just, I don't think the questions were asked about fraud.
So we can delay this to another meeting and take this up in, under sure. when we're more prepared for that topic.
Yeah, and as we did with the other gentleman earlier this year, we could, if you direct us, calculate the retirement benefit without the on-call pay, see if they want to retire pending, you know, what we find out and decide on the on-call pay.
I would make a motion to direct staff to calculate the retirement without the on-call pay and see whether that employee still chooses to
retire. A letter explaining it as we did and as Supervisor Mitchell.
Or they can wait pending the outcome of
sure.
the other.
Is there a second to the motion?
I'd second.
Raleigh, are you standing to comment?
Please, if I may, Mr. Chairman. I was going to recommend, but you haven't done it, that you heed your counsel's advice and be very careful about the use of the word fraud. You are using the term fraud, which to me suggests criminal behavior, an intent to defraud, to take something to which you're not entitled, for a situation to which it does not apply. I want you to understand not only the point about you have AB 197 in effect and on-call was clearly covered by the stay. On-call was something that you have always recognized as being compensable. And now because of a couple of newspaper articles,
no.
you've decided that this becomes a matter of utmost concern. And all of this is of concern to us. But I would point out, first of all, a newspaper article is not evidence. So if you're going to do an investigation, I hope you do more than rely upon a newspaper article. Secondly, as your staff has pointed out, there's a significant difference between somebody being paid on call and not being on call, and somebody being paid on call and being on call. Now, I think your memo made some reference to something that was exposed a year or two ago, that some top-level managers in the Health Services Department are paid on call pay. And I heard Dr. Walker say it at a public meeting, so what I'm saying to you is hearsay, but this is not a court of law, that essentially it was done so that those people could have salaries that were competitive in the marketplace and their official county salary was not competitive. They weren't being required to be on call any more than any other manager is. In the case of people who our union represents, who are the subject, I believe, of this memo, they have clearly performed the services for which they are required to perform to be on call. They perform a service which this county requires, 24-hour coverage, but there's not a sufficient amount of work to pay people on three shifts a day. So instead of doing that, people are required to be on call, and under our collective bargaining agreement, they are compensated 1 hour for every 4 hours of on-call. Being on-call restricts their personal freedom. They have to be available to respond to a phone call. That means they respond to an emergency situation. It means they're not able to do a number of things that one might otherwise do on one's own time. It means they get phone calls at 2 a.m. interrupting their sleep, and they are paid for that. The concern the article raises, which I believe is a legitimate concern and which you will not hear me defend, is whether the system has allowed employees to take more of that assignment in their last year of employment. That's the issue that has been raised by the article. In my mind, that is not fraud, and I hope no one on this board thinks that's fraud. So the question is whether this body not whether you're going to reform all the pension system in California or save the employer every nickel you can save them, but the question is, does this body have the authority to say to an employee who has worked under the rules that you have done something untoward which we have specific statutory authority to say you now don't get to do? What I've heard your counsel say is you might have that authority under AB 197, but with a stay in effect, you don't have that authority now. And if you do have that authority, I think you have to be very clear as to how you are going to look at a situation where somebody who is being compensated for something which is retirement compensable, that you still would have the ability to say, but you did something in that last year. You, quote, spiked. You, quote, gamed the system. Whatever term one uses, that means you're not going to get all of that to be credited. And if you're going to get to that point, I hope you will be very explicit to both employees and employers as to how you will make those judgments. But to suggest that this action is a fraud, I think, is a place you should not go. You may have a statutory provision that defines fraud in a more general way, and if your counsel says that's something you can investigate, but to most of us, fraud is a much more serious matter than taking advantage of rules that exist. And so I hope you will be very careful in your use of language, and I think you should not deny this pension or limit this pension, because there's nothing that I've heard anybody say today that gives you the authority or that gives you a reasonable belief that you have some legal basis to say, even though our rules say on-call is included, even though we've told you that, that because we don't like the way you work those on-call hours, you don't get the full amount of your pension. I also think you are going to be tackling a very difficult issue if you were to say to people, we're going to claw back your retirement after the fact, because we now decide that what was done was not appropriate. Lastly, the argument that may be made that this work is voluntary, again, it depends how we define the term voluntary. This work has to be done. County employees in these job classifications have to do this work under the current system. The fact that the union and the employer may have negotiated either formally or informally a system of how that work is rotated among the employees eligible to do it does not mean it's voluntary and that everybody has the opportunity to say no. If everybody says we're not doing it, then people will be ordered to do it. So the work is not voluntary. When you work it, how much of it you work may be voluntary, but this is clearly work that is part of the regular assignment of these employees. So I would urge you to approve this pension, including the on-call pay, and after the outcome of the AB 197 litigation, if the outcome upholds AB 197 and essentially abrogates the stay, if you're going to take a policy of reviewing matters to see if you think there was some additional hours worked in the final year to enhance the pension, you make how you're going to do that be extremely clear so that everybody knows what the rules will be. Thank you.
Thank you, Raleigh.
So what's the motion on the floor?
Karen's got it.
There was something else I wanted to mention that we have in the memo. I'm not sure at this point if there is. Is there a motion?
Yes,
yeah,
there was.
I'm sorry. So I can hold off until that is handled.
So I have one additional comment. I was mindful of Mr. Katz's statements. What was being discussed is, in fact, a provision in the county retirement law that specifically defines the types and kinds of conduct that it labels in the section titled fraud against county retirement system. So it's not someone's notion of criminal fraud or what you'd have to prove if you were going to go and prosecute someone in the criminal courts to a standard of beyond a reasonable doubt and to a moral certainty. It's not that issue. It's a statutory provision. Whether and to what extent conduct falls within it is something that we can't know or determine today. The question is whether really we even have the tools under existing law, putting AB 197 aside, to even look into instances where we think maybe the system was manipulated inappropriately. That's the discussion. So while I appreciated the impassioned defense of the employees, this was simply a discussion to understand what tools we have to at least investigate whether and to what extent, in any given instance, what appears to be an abuse might fall within the statutory definition that we have here. That's what this discussion's about. I can't prejudge it. I just know that it's been brought to our attention. You know, the thought was, don't rely on what you read in the newspaper. If I didn't read it in the newspaper, I wouldn't know about it. And that's a pretty telling observation. Like it or not, you know, the First Amendment gives us the ability to get educated. We don't always like what we read, but at least we found out about it. And it's raised the issue. We've had a pretty lively discussion over a couple of meetings here about it. It's not going away. We're going to have to figure out how to deal with it in light of the stay and what we have under AB 197, but also what we have under existing law. So I think the direction was hopefully to be able to come back looking at the toolbox, including existing law, and whether to what extent these types and kinds of conducts might arguably fall within the statute. If they don't, well, then it's not in the toolbox. But we won't know that until we get a report back. That's what I think.
Richard?
I just think maybe all the board members and everybody should read 31455.5. That's the section Scott was just claiming to, and it's what I brought up earlier. Read it for yourself, okay? If you don't think it gives you anything, it's got several paragraphs, about a half a page of stuff. That's where the word fraud comes from, because that's the title. And then I don't think it uses it anywhere else in the body. It just says it is unlawful. Okay, and read all this stuff with just what we know right now, and if you think it doesn't apply, then fine, vote accordingly. I think it does. I really do. I think there's enough evidence to support what's going on just by reading this. And it wasn't the best tool in the world. It has to be blatant. That's what it has to be, blatant, to stand out. And maybe that was their intention a long time ago, was to be blatant, but it's there. It's, you know, when you read it, I think it does apply. I think the tool's there. That's how I honestly and truly feel about this.
So the motion is to bring it back?
Well, no, we have direction to bring that back at a future meeting. The motion that Deborah made was to go ahead and calculate this person's retirement benefit without the on-call pay, and send a letter that we're reviewing that further.
And you second?
You second.
And John and Jerry both second. Jerry seconded.
I do. Okay. Any other comment on the motion? All those in favor of the motion, raise your hand.
No, Gabe. Okay. Except Gabe.
I'm going to abstain.
Okay.
All those opposed? Abstention?
One abstention.
Okay. Thank you very much. One more thing, Karen?
I did have one more thing I wanted to point out in the memo on page 3, in the very last paragraph, something we haven't discussed yet today, and that is...
Which memo? Or attachment?
Item...
Agenda item 9.
Item 9. On-call pay. We say here that the board could consider whether county on-call pay should be excluded from compensation for retirement purposes to the extent it is voluntary rather than mandatory for everyone in the class or grade of position. This would be a change in the board's policy with regards to how the county is reporting pensionable compensation, but it would be consistent with how other districts are reporting on-call pay to us. It is supportable by law. It's supportable by the statute. It's supportable by recent case law. So that is something that the board could consider in changing going forward with future earnings, that the county would only report as pensionable to us that on-call pay that members were required to do, required to perform, and not that which they volunteer to do.
Can that be done with a stay in place?
That's right. We do have a stay in place, and so...
This would be for everybody, but not just PEPRA members.
Right, correct.
For everybody.
Oh, okay. All right.
Interesting. On-call pay is completely excluded from PEPR members as compensation outside of normal working hours. So it's only actually for legacy.
So even though Karen went over that paragraph, the question to legal is, can that even be done when there's a stay in place right now?
We couldn't implement it with the stay in place because it would be a change in our existing policy, and we're obligated to continue with our existing policy right now.
We could request that it be reported both ways so that we would at least have the information on a going forward basis.
That's an excellent idea.
Yeah.
You said just one question on that though. If somebody's on vacation, somebody's got to cover, do you consider that voluntary or required?
Good question.
Mr. Chairman, Raleigh Katz, Local One. If you are going to even take the step of asking that it be reported, you're going to be need to be very careful about what you consider to be voluntary and not and mandatory, and what the employer might and what the unions might. The example I just spoke of, is it voluntary because there's a process that says we have a sign-up, and you sign up for this week and you sign that week? Or is it mandatory because every employee, that there must be a certain number of employees who must cover that work, and we've simply negotiated a system for having that coverage? I understand why you may think that system allows people to do more of that work in their last year of employment and therefore increase their pension, and that you may not want that to happen. But that's different than saying we're going to say that's not mandatory.
Not a question to you, Raleigh, but Karen, with regards to the other employers who report it as mandatory,
right,
as opposed to voluntary, could you guys look into how they make that determination? Because that determination may be inconsistent with what we, I believe, is the case. Yes.
I can speak for Central San Jose.
Okay.
We report it separately. If someone's in a classification that has on-call, they're assigned X number and it's just on rotation. Yes. You may then elect to put it up, and if someone else is in a volunteer pool, they may get assigned that, but we don't report that as pensionable.
Okay.
But if no one is signed up for the voluntary, you must serve your time.
So everybody's responsible for a certain amount of time,
whether
they work it or give
That's
it up
correct.
Or somebody else comes in, okay. And other employers may have different situations, fire,
so
or
we
police.
Can,
or
is it a trade or you
we
just
can
give
come
a...
Back
to
no, you just put it up. You don't get to select who
I mean, you don't have to make it up later. You've given it up and that's it.
No.
Okay.
I mean, they do have to serve one a year just so they retain the skills and everything. But other than that,
so maybe we could contact the employer or the other employers, particularly the county, I guess, as to how, whether or not they make a determination as to what's voluntary and what's mandatory, and is it differing between department? Did the department head make a determination? Is it probably not an overall policy with the county, as we've learned from various departments do various things. And so we probably need to look into this more as to who and how that determination is made, and then bring that back to the board.
You know, things like seniority would be good too. So that plays a factor in who gets it.
Okay. Anything else with regards to item 9?
Should we take a break?
I'm sorry.
Take a break so we can let the crowd go.
And we can go to the restroom.
Yeah, we do need to take a little break.
Yeah. Okay. Why don't we take a 5-minute break, 20 minutes for one?
After here in the building.
Not in our own private space.